Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Derek Felix here of the Hard Hits Network. A very special edition here. I'm going to talk a little bit about the return of hockey. Yeah, believe it or not, the NHL did, in fact, return yesterday on August the 1st on Saturday with a slate of games. This is the Stanley Cup qualifying round, obviously, with the expanded format. So that features 16 teams competing for 8 spots to get into what you would really call the Stanley Cup playoffs, even though it is playoffs. But these are best 3 out of 5 series. So they're shorter series, which means getting a good start, getting off to a good start, at least, it helps. But if you can win, if the team that loses the first game can win game 2, and remember, there are no fans in the stands, so this is a very unique situation out in Toronto for the East and out in Edmonton for the West. If you can win game 2 and even up the series, then you're not up against it. So that's what they're facing out in the bubbles and, of course, with the pandemic. And they're doing the best they can do. So just want to give some thoughts out on the fact that there was hockey, and it was nice to see. And I'm also going to give out some thoughts on a very important topic, talking about Matt Dumba, who gave a very important speech prior to the Chicago Blackhawks and Oilers game. I want to save that, actually. So I want to get into the Rangers. Rangers, of course, took on the Carolina Hurricanes, and game 2 will be tomorrow at noon again. So it starts a little weird to get used to, but these games are being played at Scotiabank Center, which used to be Air Canada Center in Toronto. So they have, this is how they have to have it set up. And there's a different slate of games today. The Flyers will be in action today. There also will be some round robin games too, including Bruins, I think, and the Flyers. Yeah, so there will be some of those teams will be in action as well. So, and I think the Blue Jackets and Leafs as well, and with all the remaining Western Conference teams haven't started, like the Wild and Canucks. So here are my thoughts. I just want to give you some of my thoughts here on the Rangers. They lost yesterday 3-2. If you want a recap, you could go to newyorkpuck.com. That's the Battle of Hudson, actually. It used to be the Battle of New York. But go to our website. I put up a detailed recap. I'm going to put up some more stuff later on. I found some interesting quotes from David Quinn that I thought really hit the nail on the head on why they lost the first game to the Hurricanes, a team that they dominated during the regular season, winning all 4 games in the season series. And I think the Hurricanes had something to prove. They were out to prove something yesterday. And you could just see it really early by the way they played. They came out aggressive. They came out skating. And that's what they do. They will skate. They will forecheck. They like to possess the puck. And they did a great job of that. And they hit. They were finishing checks. And they were winning battles. And I think Mika Zibanejad said that he felt the Rangers were out-hustled. I think that really is true. When you look at all the power plays, they were 0-for-7. And the Hurricanes do have a good penalty kill, and they're aggressive. But the Rangers, they lost the battle of special teams. They lost a lot of puck battles. And they were flat. They were flat in the first period. I don't know if it was nerves or whatever. But also, Henrik Lundqvist got the start. And I was, like, amazed at first. But then when they said that Igor Shesterkin was unfit to play, which means that he's got some kind of injury in his day-to-day, that it makes it more understandable. Remember, Lundqvist is a great safety net. I know he's not what he used to be, but you know what? He performed wonderfully yesterday. He gave this team, the Rangers, a chance. And he made 34 saves, and he was under siege early. I think the shots were 12-4 in the first period. And the Canes scored 1-on-1 in, 61 seconds in, on a really great setup, great cross-ice feed from Tuvo Teravainen was a great passer for the Hurricanes. He loves to pass. You can't let him find the seam, and he did. He made a great cross-ice pass to move Lundqvist side to side to Jacob Slavin, who is the Hurricanes' best defenseman, even without Dougie Hamilton, who right now we don't know what his status is. I don't think you'll see him unless maybe there's a Game 5 but scenario. But Slavin is a tremendous skater. He is probably one of the most underrated defensemen in the league. I think he's definitely a top 20 defenseman, easy. He's a shutdown guy. He can skate. He also put up like 35 or 36 points this year. He was also like plus 30. So he made a perfect shot on Lundqvist to the short side. Maybe Lundqvist could have had that, but it's tough when a goalie is moving side to side laterally like that. Obviously, you like to see him make the save there, but there wasn't a lot of coverage on that because Brady Shea delivered a huge hit on Jesper Fast on the first shift, and Fast never saw the ice again. So that could be a key loss for the New York Rangers because Jesper Fast is part of that top six, and he's that two-way guy. He's that guy that you could plug. He kills penalties. He hustles. He plays with Artemi Panarin and Ryan Strome. So right away, David Quinn had to mix and match his lines. And I thought he did a good job. Kaapo Kakko, who showed a lot of improvement and was one of the best Ranger skaters in this game, had 5 shots on goal, led the team, got moved up. And Julien Gauthier, who didn't show any – he didn't look intimidated. Let's just put it that way. Both him and Kaapo didn't look intimidated. And they were two of the Rangers' best skaters, actually, in this game. But falling behind early obviously allowed the Hurricanes to set the tone. Lundqvist was sensational. He made some great saves, especially that breakaway on Warren Fogle to keep it at 1-0, one-on-one, and he coolly shut it down or melted it down and did a great job there holding position. Also made a huge save later in the game on Jake Garter on another side-to-side play. This time Lundqvist able to get across, and this was on a Hurricanes power play. There were 14 total in this game, and I have to say, I think it's because there wasn't a lot of gameplay. There's some rust. They only played one exhibition, these teams, and there were a lot of penalties. And most of these were legit calls. So you can't get on the refs. They called it because that's how the game was played. And the players have to adjust. And hopefully there won't be as many penalties called. I like to see the Rangers play the Hurricanes more at 5-on-5, and the Hurricanes are a really good possession team. They won the face-off battle 31-26. They have a lot of depth. They have a heavy forecheck. That's why this is not going to be an easy series. I give the Rangers credit for getting back into the game. They did fall behind 2-0. Sebastian Aho, who is the Hurricanes, I would say he's their best forward. He's probably is their best player. Able to tip in a shot on the power play from Svechnikov, and I think Jacob Slavin. So he had a goal. So both Aho and Slavin each had a goal and an assist in this game. And Aho was the offensive leader of this team. And Howden was in the box for that. And Howden got a lot of ice time in the first period, more than Panarin. Panarin did not have a good game, but there was not a lot of 5-on-5. He still played over 20 minutes. But I felt Quinn should have got him on the ice more, especially down on penalty killer. I think he could have used Panarin you could use Panarin on the penalty kill if you have to, because Panarin can make defensive plays. He's good with his stick. He makes good reads. It's funny because he finally used Panarin on the penalty kill when Tony D'Angelo was healthy, and he took a penalty he shouldn't have taken late with like about 3 minutes or so left. And what happens, he sticks Panarin out there with Zibanejad, who always kills penalties, and who played like almost 26 minutes, which led the Rangers skaters. What happens? Panarin makes a play on the boards along to Zibanejad, and Zibanejad finds Mark Stahl out of all people, and Stahl, with the one-timer, gets a shorthanded goal to make things interesting. And that was your 3-2 final. Unfortunately, Mark Stahl also, he giveth, he taketh away. The unfortunate bounce that went off Mark Stahl. This is after the Rangers had cut the score to 2-1 on a beautiful Mika Zibanejad tip-in. He was able to redirect a point shot Terrific job there to get his stick on the Ryan Lindgren shot. Ryan Lindgren's first postseason game, he gets an assist, and he settled in after a little bit of a rough start. But that was a real great tip and good forecheck by Pavel Buchnevich, even though he didn't get a point on it. And Kreider wasn't that effective in this game. I felt like he needed to be more of a factor. He needs to be more of a factor at getting in front of Mrazek. And he just didn't do enough. He did get an assist on that play, but he needs to be better. Panera needs to be better. There's a few guys that are going to have to be better if they want to even up this series. There's got to be some urgency and some desperation tomorrow. There has to be. Because you fall behind 2-0, there's no such thing as home ice, okay? You're down 2-0. You're playing on neutral ice. So the teams that fall behind 1-0 in these short series, if you go up 1-0 in the best of five, 82% of the time you win game one, you win the series. But so that's why it's urgent for the New York Rangers to come back and get this thing evened up. They're going to have to play a lot better. And they can't come out the way they came out. They came out skating in quicksand, and when Kaapo Kakko and Julien Gauthier are your best forwards in the first period, that doesn't say much. And Brendan Smith too. I thought Brendan Smith actually had a good game. I know he was caught on for a couple of goals against, but I thought he had a good game. From a Hurricane standpoint, he did what they had to do. I mean, they initiated. They controlled the play. The penalties, they did get into penalty trouble, and they gave the Rangers plenty of opportunities on the power play. Rangers' power play just wasn't sharp. They had a couple of good looks on the power play, but when you have seven power plays and you only get eight shots through, that's just not going to get it done. I thought the Canes did a really good, nice job of taking time and space away from both Artemi Panarin and Mika Zibanejad in this game. As I said, Kreider wasn't really much of a factor. And look, those are things that the Rangers are going to have to adjust on. They need those guys to be factors. When D'Angelo is getting his point shot through and Mrazek's able to see it and make the save, and you know, if Kreider's not able to get to rebound and Panarin and Mika are not able to really connect much on the power play, that's bad. That's a bad sign. So they need to be a little bit better. I thought Adam Fox had kind of a quiet game as well. Look, there are a lot of young players on this team, so it's going to take time. But they don't have a lot of time here, so they're going to have to adjust on the fly. Look, this is going to be a tough series for them to win. My feeling on the goalie situation, just based on Clint's answer saying he was unsure about Shesterkin and he will be available, that makes me think Lundqvist will be in net again tomorrow. And Lundqvist, as I said, terrific in this game. Not much he could do on this. Maybe he could have got across, I said, on the Slavin goal, but the Aho was a tip goal, 15 seconds into a power play. That was a set play, and the Rangers did not get to Aho in front. And the third goal, what are you going to do there? I mean, that's just a quick little one-timer, and Lundqvist is in position, and it just goes off Staal's leg or whatever and changes direction and goes right through. There's nothing you could do about that. Martin Nekas got credit for that, and it turned out to be the winner. And Staal did get the shorthanded goal late, but I'm sure he felt bad, you know, about that, about what happened there. It's just, it's hockey sometimes. Sometimes you're going to get unfavorable bounces. So I pretty much laid it all out there. They got to be more disciplined, too. You can't take it that many penalties. You can't do that. That's not going to work. Faceoffs, they did okay on the faceoffs. Look, this is tough because the Canes, even without Dougie Hamilton and Brett Pesce, they got a lot of depth. Sammy Vatanen, I thought, had a good game. Jacob Slavin, I mentioned. They've got a lot of good depth. Not just on the blue line, but on the forwards. Guys like Vincent Trocheck who hit the post with a great move and a backhand up top. That was a great move. I thought he was effective in this game. Justin Williams, Jordan Staal. Jordan Staal's always tough on faceoffs, and he matches up pretty well. So it's not going to be an easy series. You got Nido Rider. He actually got an assist in this game, and Nido Rider is a guy who had kind of a disappointing regular season, but he's been in the playoffs before, both the Wild and Hurricanes. He knows what it's about. Guys throughout their lineup that can make it difficult. I mean, even guys that play on their fourth line, like Jordan Martinuk, who finishes every check. And so this is they are a little deeper. That is a very true statement. The Rangers need their best players to be their best players, and they're going to have to play a better game. It doesn't matter which guy is in that. If Lundqvist plays like that, you will have a chance. They'll have a chance to win tomorrow, but you can't give up a goal that early. It allowed the Hurricanes to – I thought Brady Shea set the tone of his big hit. We don't know if we're going to see Jesper Fast again. And if Fast can't go, I would probably lean towards Stephen Fogarty to insert. You could bump Kako up based on how he played into one of the top two lines, whether it's with Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. Or you could play him with Strom and Panarin, which I like very much, because then you could keep Buchnevich with both Kreider and Zibanejad. So we'll see how David Quinn plays that, and maybe Julien Gauthier gets to move up onto the third line with Filipito. So we'll see how that goes in Di Giuseppe. Now, Fred De Lemieux is serving his second and final game tomorrow of his suspension, and obviously they could use Brendan Lemieux now with Jesper Fast out. Instead, Stephen Fogarty, he's a little bit of a checking-type player, so he can move in and maybe play fourth line and play some penalty kill for them. So I think that would be the move to make. That's my opinion. Now, I just want to give a couple of takes on a couple of other series. These were bigger surprises, okay? Not the Islanders beating the Panthers 2-1, because the Panthers are just they're an easy team to play against. And unless they can get into a more freewheeling series where the Islanders, who have all their defense back, and Andy Green was a scratch for because they have Adam Pellick back, the Islanders are going to be a pain in the butt for the Panthers. That was a 2-1 final. But if it is tight checking, the Islanders are going to win that series. Varlamov played well, and I didn't see any of it, but I wasn't surprised. The Islanders led all the way. They got a goal from Pajot, and we know how clutch Pajot is. So he got the first goal for them, and they got one more, I think, from Beauvillier on the power. And Beauvillier's becoming a little bit of a go-to guy for the Islanders. He's becoming a guy that comes up with clutch goals. So he's gotten better. He's really gotten better. He's shown a lot of improvement this season. Then the Islanders take the first game there. So that puts the Panthers behind the eight ball. Now, Bobrovsky, he did keep his team in the game. He made some big saves, but Varlamov was a little better in the battle of Russian netminders. Now let's talk about a couple of upsets. How about the Oilers losing to the Blackhawks 6-4, a game that they actually trailed 6-2 in and 4-1. Yeah, the Blackhawks, who Larry Brooks took to beat the Oilers. Maybe it's because he doesn't believe in the goaltending that Edmonton has with Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen. I would have started Koskinen over Smith myself. He starts Mike Smith, does Dave Tippett, and Mike Smith got chased. And he was out of there and gave up, I think, five goals or six goals, whatever he gave up. He gave up five, I think, and Koskinen gave up maybe one. And how about Dominic Kubalik, one of the three finalists for the Calder Trophy, who will finish third behind either Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar. We don't know who's going to win it. I would give it to Makar myself, but five for Kubalik, two goals and three assists. That's a terrific game from him. Jonathan Toews had a good game. Patrick Kane only had one assist, but when you have Kubalik making that kind of a difference, and the Oilers are not known for their defense. The Oilers did get four goals. They did make it a little interesting late, and Connor McDavid and Dreisaitl both had a goal and two assists each. But if they don't get goaltending, and Corey Crawford is playing for the Blackhawks, so that might be the edge to the Hawks' net. Chicago doesn't play much defense, but if the Oilers are going to play this freewheeling game and think it's going to be easy, and guess what? The Hawks can score goals. So the Oilers are up against it. They got to win that game. They better win game two. That's all I'm going to say about that. One other game of note, I wanted to mention really quickly here on this special hockey podcaster, Derek Felix, here at the Hard Hits Network. How about Montreal Canadiens defeating the Pittsburgh Penguins 3-2? I didn't see any of regulation of this game, but I know that Carey Price stood on his head in the first period of this game, stopped all 18 Penguins shots in the first period. As the Canadiens were outshot and outplayed, shots were 18-6 in favor of Pittsburgh. They could not score on Carey Price. And if you think that Carey Price is not a top five or elite goaltender, or maybe he's definitely top seven or top eight still, you're wrong. I mean, Carey Price is the Canadiens because they don't have much defense aside from Shea Weber. Jeff Petrie is more of an offensive type defenseman. And I mentioned him as one of the keys to the Canadiens. And what happens after the Penguins came back to tie it at two? Guess what? Jeff Petrie delivers the overtime winner in the first overtime of sudden death on a nice little pass, feathery pass, I think. I forget who made the pass. Might have been Tatar. But a really nice play and a good, quick one-timer. And I don't really think that Matt Murray had too much of a chance on that, to be honest. I thought that was just a blown assignment by the Penguins. And guess what? The Canadiens take game one, which means the Penguins know they've got to win the next game. And that's the interesting thing about these best three out of fives. I mean, these games, you lose that first game, there is so much more urgency than in a best of seven scenario where there's home ice and there's fans. And that was strange, too, not having fans there. One of my followers, Vivian, Montreal Canadiens fan, she said it's a little eerie and a little weird, you know, not having fans, not having any atmosphere. And I agree. It's definitely different. I think they've done a good job so far, and I hope that things are going to continue to be successful as far as the playoffs go. But great job out of Canadiens. The rookie Nick Suzuki, who they got with Tatar in that big trade with the Vegas Golden Knights for Pacioretty. He got on the board yesterday, and he's a guy that could be a factor. And the Penguins did come back from two goals down. They got two goals in the second period, about 4 minutes apart. Crosby got them on the board. They were able to tie it, and you would think the Penguins would come back and win. Canadiens are known for blowing leads, but the Penguins could not get that third goal in the third period, and they lost this game in sudden death. And the Canadiens, Carey Price, finished with 38 or 39 saves, steals game one. And that's a concern. Here's my question. Will Matt Murray be the starter for the Pens in game two? It doesn't sound like he was bad in this game. Or will Mike Sullivan go to Tristan Jarry? It's a legit question. So this is a legit question. The other game of note was the Winnipeg Jets taking on the Calgary Flames. And the Flames played a really great second period to win this game. They were down 1-0. Key note here, I did take Winnipeg to win this in five games because I think Connor Hellebuck could be the difference in terms of the goaltending. But Mark Scheifele, a big leader, a clutch scorer, had what looks like a serious leg injury. If he cannot come back for the Winnipeg Jets, that really changes the dynamic. If he can't come back for them, Scheifele only played 259. Before he was left this game. And that's a big hit. That is a big hit for the Winnipeg Jets. That changes things. Talbot did get the start and only had to face 18 shots, made 17 saves. Cam Talbot, he deserves to start for the Flames. He was better than David Rittich down the stretch, and that was the right call. And Connor Hellebuck did face 33 shots, made 30 saves, but the Winnipeg Jets took some penalties in that second period, and they got burned. Power play goals, Johnny Gaudreau, from a tough angle, able to put in a rebound over the top of Hellebuck. Michael Backlund, the third unanswered goal late in the period. That was a killer from Mangiapane, who's a nice player. And Lucic getting an assist. And also, Calgary getting a shorthanded goal. So it was Calgary that controlled the special teams, and that's what won the game for them. Toby Ryder Bigley was a former Arizona Coyote, got a shorthanded goal in this game. And Mangiapane, there's that Mangiapane guy again, a guy that was like a 6th or 7th round pick. He's become a good key player for this team. Gets the empty netter, and the Flames win, take game 1-4-1. Yes, there was a fight. Blake Wheeler, Matthew Tkachuk. Tkachuk doing his best to drive the Winnipeg Jets nuts, and that's his job. Matthew Tkachuk is a power forward. Matthew Tkachuk is a guy that you have to watch out for. So Winnipeg had 7 power plays and went 0-for-7. That sounds like the Rangers. Calgary went 2 out of 4 on the power play. And they were +3, and they had a shorthanded goal. So there's a lot of pressure here. There's going to be a lot of pressure on the Winnipeg Jets to win the next game, obviously. And if they don't have Scheifele available, that is a big hit for them. So we'll see what goes on with that. Who knows? Maybe that alters things. You know, the Flames have a good roster. It's just I did like Winnipeg's core better, but you take Scheifele out of that lineup, that really is going to be a tough loss, tough hit for them. All right, I want to spend a couple minutes here. I want to talk about Matthew Dumba. Matt Dumba came out before the drop of the game between the Blackhawks and Oilers in Edmonton. And obviously, Matt Dumba represents the Minnesota Wild. They will be taking on the Vancouver Canucks in the late game tonight. And Matt Dumba made a really nice speech, I thought. He talked about ending racism. Now, ending racism is a tough thing. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are narrow-minded, and there are bigots, and they do exist, and there is racism. In our country, and it's not just in our country, it's in other countries too as well. And I think that's why there was such a polarizing reaction to the NHL's pulse. Even I wasn't really happy because it just feels like they're pushing all this Lives Matter. And I'm not saying Black Lives don't matter. Black Lives do matter. Every life matters. My whole thing is I don't think that's an up and up honest group, because I think it's controlled by the far left and by the rich. But I will say that I liked Matt Dumba's speech. I like what he had to say, and there have been instances where hockey players, black hockey players, we haven't had a lot of black hockey players where they've had to deal with racist fans doing things like banana peels being thrown on the ice. And that's just disgraceful. Okay. And disgraceful, distasteful, and it shouldn't happen. So, but you know, the difference between a Matt Dumba and a LeBron James, that Matt Dumba is very active. He is very active in the community, and he has done things. He does a lot of things. And Matt Dumba is a guy that's doing stuff to spread a message. And he gave a really good speech and took a knee. He was the first hockey player to really do that. And he got a little bit of a pat from two other respected Black hockey players. Malcolm Subban, P.K. Subban's brother, backup for the Blackhawks, gave him a little bit of a pat. And Darnell Nurse, who was a key defenseman for the Edmonton Oilers, their top defenseman, gave him also a pat. It's a nice picture. It's a nice photo, I think. But I like the words. Black Lives Matter. Breonna Taylor's life matters. It does. And from that standpoint, he's right. He's right. Anytime there is something racist and there's a death that's unwarranted, like what happened with her, that whole thing that happened with her in February, and it didn't come to the forefront until much later. It shouldn't happen. Just like George Floyd. And look, every instance is different, but I give Mr. Dumba a lot of credit for what he said. He spoke not just about that. He spoke about how the playoffs are a chance for a little normalcy, you know, from the COVID-19 outbreak. He also talked about the Hockey Diversity Alliance, So he represents the Hockey Diversity Alliance, does Matthew Dumba. And he talked about the systematic racism and how deeply rooted it is within our society. Turtles unaffected by systematic racism are unaware, I'm sure, that some of you believe that this topic has garnered too much attention during the last couple months. Let me assure you, it has not. Racism is a man-made creation, and all it does is deteriorate from our collective prosperity. Racism is everywhere. Racism is everywhere, and we need to fight against it. On behalf of the NHL and the Hockey Diversity Alliance, we vow and promise to stand up for injustice and fight for what is right. I know firsthand, as a minority playing the great game of hockey, the unexplainable and difficult challenges that come with it. The Hockey Diversity Alliance and NHL want kids to feel safe, comfortable, free-minded every time they enter an arena. I stand in front of you today on behalf of those groups and promise you that we will fight against injustice and fight for what is right. I hope that this inspires a new generation of hockey players and hockey fans. Black lives matter. Breonna Taylor's life matters. Hockey is a great game, but it could be a whole lot greater, and it starts with all of us. What do I take away? I think it's a really great statement, first off. I think he sounds well-educated, and he's doing a lot of really good things because he's not just speaking, but he represents that Hockey Diversity Alliance, so he's doing stuff in the community, and that's the difference. There are a lot of rich athletes that think that just taking a knee and wearing some shirts with Black Lives Matter on it is enough. No, it's not. No, it's not. There are Black lives dying every day. Every day, whether it's from racial injustice with bad cops, and there are, and that needs to end. Whether it's they're facing systematic racism, and there is, especially in low income schools, I would know. And also with being pulled over for no reason and stuff like that and profiling, there's that as well. But there's also innocent black lives dying in the streets every day, whether it's in Chicago or it's here in New York, where crime is way up ever since they decided to go anti-cop. And they are anti-cop here, and it's not good. And it's not good to be anti-cop. Look, I think that there needs to be better communication, and there needs to be a revamping. There needs to be more of an understanding between police and minorities, and it's a two-way street. That's the difference. That's the difference between how I feel about the situation and how a lot of the Black Lives Matter movement feels about it. See, when they say hands up, don't shoot, they're kind of generalizing. And not every police officer is like that. And not every police officer is white. I've seen some stuff said on social media that's just embarrassing when it comes to law enforcement. Law enforcement is not a race. Law enforcement is here to serve and protect. But in some cases, they go too far. Eric Garner, for example, out here, Staten Island. My opinion is that things do have to change and they do have to be better. But I also would also like to see 1-year-old Devontae Garner remembered. His name matters. He was only one. And how did he die? From gunshots, gang-related gunshots for no reason. A 1-year-old boy who had his whole life in front of him. Brandon Hendricks, getting ready to go to St. John's College after graduating. Basketball player, basketball star in the Bronx. How did he die? Gunshots after he graduated high school, like 2 days later, 17. And this is part of my issue with the movement. Yes, the movement is a good movement. But it also creates a little bit of divisive attention as well, because they're not representing every black life, and that's part of my problem. See, every black life or black life, that's what it's about. It's not just about there's hatred, and there's sense of senseless violence as well, and lives are lost for no reason, for inexplicable reasons, and even out here in Staten Island, that's happening. People are being shot up, and they're either dying or they're in the hospital and surviving, and it shouldn't happen. So they want to talk about how much Black Lives Matter. Well, if it matters so much to you, then get out there and do something about it. And don't forget about the Devontae Garters and Brandon Hendricks, because there's a whole lot of them. And don't forget about what goes on in Chicago every day. And that's my biggest issue with the Democrats. I like to talk politically, but I have to talk and use some knowledge here. I think the NHL, you're doing it the right way, whereas the NBA is basically just they just sold out basically, and they're going to push fans away that have been fans for a long time. I don't think we need to be. I think most of us don't need to be reminded of how to act and how to treat other people. I don't need to see shirts. I don't need to see people kneeling. I think there's a better way to do it, and I've always felt that way. And it is what it is. But I think Matt Dumba did a great job, and I want to give him full credit and props. So that's gonna do it for this podcast. If you tuned in, thank you for tuning in. There's a whole slate of playoff games again today in hockey. Some of them are more important than others best of fives. Those are the big ones. And some of them are just for playoff seeding. So enjoy the hockey and just be good out there. We need to be good to each other. We need to be more understanding of each other. If I don't share the same opinion as you, that doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't make me, it just means I'm a little different. I'm different. I'm anti-racism. I'm anti-hatred. I'm anti-labeling. That's what I am. There shouldn't be any of that. So, I just want to be clear on that. So this is Derek Felix signing off. I hope that you listen to my messages and help you took something positive away from it. And I really do hope that the hockey will be good. And I think it's nice to actually just have the sport back. So that's nice. I have some other thoughts on how they could maybe have more low-income families and black players, future black hockey players in the sport. But I'm going to save that for another podcast, because hockey is a very expensive sport. So that's something else. So there's a little bit of hypocrisy from the NHL, and they need to do a better job when it comes to making it more affordable for the lower income families, because it's a lot easier to put on a pair of sneakers, shorts, and a shirt and play basketball than it is to play hockey because of the equipment. So I think I pretty much laid it out there for you. All right, this is Derek Felix of the Hard Hits Network, ending on signing off on this special podcast edition. I'm going to watch a little bit of playoff hockey, enjoy your Sunday, and for people out in the South, the hurricane, be safe out there, keeping you in mind, especially people in Florida and the Carolinas, and be safe. Have a great day, everybody. See you later.